The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is John Jantz, author of The Self-Reliant Entrepreneur, 366 Daily Meditations to Feed Your Soul and Grow Your Business. And you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which was named by Forbes as one of 11 smart podcasts that will keep you in the know, and named by LinkedIn as one of 10 podcasts that will make you a better marketer. My goal for this podcast is to help us both keep up with the latest ideas in the quickly changing field of modern marketing and sales. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's show notes at MarketingBookPodcast.com. And since you're a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or some other helpful resource that I know of for whatever situation you find yourself in, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat and I'll try to point you in the right direction and save you time. This show is a labor of love that I do in my spare time. My day job is running a marketing agency where we work with manufacturers to help them grow. If that sounds like your company and you're serious about growth, check out our guide to lead generation for manufacturers on our website, salesartillery.com, or Google lead generation for manufacturers, and you'll find the guide atop the organic results. Now, the number one worry I hear from listeners is that they feel they aren't reading enough books to be more successful. So, special thanks to this episode's sponsor, Blinkist, which is an app that takes the key insights from the best nonfiction books and distills them into a format that you can read or listen to in just a few minutes on your smartphone. Several of the books featured on the Marketing Book Podcast are on Blinkist. You can sign up for free at Blinkist.com/marketingbookpodcast. Blinkist is spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. And if you opt for the paid version, you'll get an additional 20% off, but only if you go to Blinkist.com/marketingbookpodcast. I also have a link to it at marketingbookpodcast.com. And now, on with the show. Today, we welcome John Jantz back to the Marketing Book Podcast. Talk about his new book, The Self-Reliant Entrepreneur, 366 Daily Meditations to Feed Your Soul and Grow Your Business, published by Wiley. John Jantz has owned a business for almost 3 decades. And while it may appear he knows what he's talking about, he is simply observing and documenting the entrepreneurial condition through his own unique journey. He's the best-selling author of Duct Tape Marketing, Duct Tape Selling, SEO for Growth, and The Referral Engine, among others. His works have been translated into 10 languages, and his writing has appeared in publications such as Inc. and Entrepreneur Magazine. He lives with his wife in Kansas City, Missouri, and at 8,689 feet above sea level in Coral Creek Canyon in Colorado. John, congratulations on The Self-Reliant Entrepreneur, and welcome back to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you so much. You have been doing this for a while. I think, is this my fourth time on the show?
It is, and clearly John is reading my screen here, because after this interview, there will be a special induction ceremony into a very, very exclusive club, which is the Marketing Book Podcast Four Timers Club. And there's only two other authors that are in that, and there have been hundreds on the show. So, John Jantz, respect.
I'm going to have to write another book, clearly.
Well, actually, I haven't.
In a club of one.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, I never did interview you about Duct Tape Marketing, so I guess if you ever update that again.
We're 2020. It's coming.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Oh, man, you heard it here first, folks. That's a Marketing Book Podcast exclusive. Well, let me clear the decks because, wow, then you will be in the Five Timers Club, which currently only one person is in.
All right.
So, but I'm interviewing him later this week, so he's going to move to six. So, I mean, it never ends, John Jantz. You know, it's a treadmill you authors are on.
I'm not sure I've got a whole bunch of more books in me. So.
Well, anyway, well, it's all about how many times you come on this show. So in other words, I've now interviewed authors twice about the same book when a second edition came out that I was crazy about. So all you have to do is just update one of your books and you're in. Okay. You're in. And as I like to say, you will be getting half-price drinks at watering holes in the Kansas City area that are offering half-price drinks, as well as discounts at restaurants that are offering discounts.
Well,
so you're welcome.
That is awesome. You know, I should be we have a mutual friend, David Merriman Scott, and I think he's updated new rules to marketing and PR about 9 times, so you've probably had him on.
He has, and when you're the Marketing Book Podcast host, you keep track of trivia just like a sports reporter does, and I know that I interviewed him about his 6th edition in 2017. His 7th is coming out in 2020, and I, fingers crossed, and with the good vibes from the listeners, I'll be able to interview him about that one, because that book, based on what I have seen, his 6th edition was 394 pages, and this next one's going to be 480 pages.
Oh, my Lord. good on him. I know that my book that we're going to talk about eventually today,
yeah,
is 400 pages, and I thought that was, you know, I thought that was overdoing it. But, you know, I signed up for it because about when I was writing this book, it's a daily, as you know, and so, you know, it was 366 pages no matter what.
Right.
And I figured that out about March, you know, or I probably wouldn't have done this.
But, you know, you had to get started, and it was kind of a forcing function, as Aaron Ross likes to talk about, and I'm glad you did. And I first heard about this about 2 years ago at Content Marketing World, where I was talking to you just before you were going to present. And of course, as I said to you, as I say to a lot of authors that I get to meet in person, any more books coming up? And you said, yeah, but I don't know, this is really going to be different. And you told me about this book, and I was blown away by the concept. I think the listener will be too. But I also have to say that recently I saw a picture somebody posted on social media. They were flying across the Atlantic, I think, and on the screen on the back of the seat in front of them on the airplane, somebody was watching John Jantz. It was like a video. What was that?
Yeah. So, you know how they have the little airplane, you know, TVs, especially on transatlantic flights or ones that go across to other continents. And I have done about 8 courses for LinkedIn Learning, you know, which was it was actually lynda.com. It was purchased by LinkedIn Learning or LinkedIn and branded as LinkedIn Learning. And so apparently they have that as an option on certain airlines, as you can watch LinkedIn courses, and there are thousands of them. So I don't know how this person stumbled onto to one of mine, but they sent me a screen capture, and it was kind of fun.
For some reason, I think it might have been Tim Hughes, the author of Smarketing. Maybe he was going home to the UK. But then, of course, I saw that, and I couldn't resist. I said, there's no escaping John Jantz. And that's even truer now, because John Jantz, and we're going to explain why, this book, now you've seared yourself into my daily routine. So I get up, and not every day, but most days, one of the things I do is I try to look at Ryan Holiday's The Daily Stoic.
Yeah.
And now this is next to it. So it's like, it's a bug that bites. So it's
Ryan and I are good friends. And in fact, we're introduced because we have the same literary agent, a gentleman by the name of Steve Hanselman. And so it was actually Steve's idea for Ryan to write that book, and he's been bugging me to write a similar format. So it'd be interesting if you want to do a little scientific research. I'd love to hear after a month or so how they sort of compare and contrast.
Okay.
Because there are some similarities, but I think there are some distinct differences as well. And it'd be kind of fun, you know, somebody who reads as much as you to kind of get your take.
Happy to. In fact, I've got a quote here. Ryan Holiday said, this book is a book that deserves a spot in every entrepreneur's morning routine. So let me just quote from one part and then get into the questions. You write, in this book, I invite you to take inspiration from a renegade minister, a handyman turned political activist and naturalist, and an innovative educator and early feminist voice. though they may seem at first an odd collection of mentors to guide today's entrepreneur. Each of these sources of inspiration produced their primary body of literary work in the mid-1800s, during a time that many cite as America's first period of a truly spirited counterculture. I'm speaking of the period often referred to as American Transcendentalism, a brief time that experienced its heyday just prior to the American Civil War and left a lasting impact on American literature, religion, philosophy, art, political activism, social thought, and as I propose in this work, a goldmine for today's enlightened entrepreneur. It doesn't matter what you call this point of view or even what you call yourself. You can possess the spirit of self-reliance and independence no matter your profession or job title. Being an entrepreneur is as much about who you choose to be as what you choose to do for a living. So, John, explain the structure of the book.
Sure. So it is a daily book. So every day, just like a calendar, you got January 1st, then January 2nd, and it's a page a day. I have taken, as you referenced there, readings from a whole vein of literature that was written in the mid-19th century. The folks that I was referencing there in the very beginning were Ralph Waldo Emerson, Henry David Thoreau, and Margaret Fuller, were the three people that I was describing as people you may not know, really.
Right.
It's not know in that context. So I take a reading from works in that period, some which people would be familiar with, some which they won't be familiar with at all because I went very deep. Then I add 100, 150 words myself that is meant to bring some context or relevance for today's entrepreneur. I'm buyer beware. I'm sharing my experience and how I've experienced being an entrepreneur. And then probably the hardest part for a lot of people is I leave you then with a question that at least some days I hope really challenges you to think a little bit about. Well, I don't have the answer to that question, or I should have the answer to that question. Let me think about that. So this book is, Seth Godin called it, it's not a book, it's a workbook, meaning that it's kind of a come to it every day, almost view it as a practice or a habit to really kind of feed your soul a little bit before you go out there and get knocked around by the world.
Right. Seth Godin said it's a daily workbook designed to challenge you to focus on the hard part. Finding work that matters. John's prompts are a masterwork. And for me, each page, the challenge question, man, does that linger.
Yeah, and that's actually the idea. Sometimes you'll have an immediate answer. In fact, I even added two lines that if you're one of those people that can stand to write in books, that you can actually maybe make some notes there or jot some thoughts there right then as you're reading it. But I find the same thing, that even if I don't have the answer to that question, it sort of plants itself in your subconscious,
yes.
I think. And maybe then, like throughout the day, you start kind of thinking, oh, maybe that's how that shows up, you know, in my life. Or maybe that doesn't serve me as well, you know, as I'd thought. So for some people, there's actually, I don't want to say dread, but there's actually a little fear of those questions. And I think it's because, you know, they are made to make you think.
Right. And you'd rather get to work and just start doing busy work rather than have to think. So,
yeah,
no well problem. Played, good sir. So, let's give the listener an example. This episode will publish on November 15th, 2019. So, I was wondering if you could share the reading from November 15th.
So let me get to November 15th. I have my handy copy here. And for those, of course, that obviously, this is our listening, so you don't get the visual of this. But I convinced my publisher to put a handy little ribbon in the book.
So yes,
mark your place. I've always wanted a ribbon in my book.
Yes, and mine already has marked with tomorrow mornings, so it's nice. Working. Yeah.
All right. So every day starts with a title, and then the meditation or reading from the literature, then my thoughts, and then your challenge question. So I'll go through those four parts. November 15th. Owning your legacy. A few fine essays do not float a person into immortality, but the generous character, the heart sweet in all excesses and under all chances, is a spectacle too beautiful and too rare to be easily forgotten. A person is better than many books. Even a person who is not immaculate may have more virtuous influence than the discreetest saint. Let us remember how fondly the old painters lingered round the story of Magdalene. That's from George William Curtis, Thackeray in America, the Oxford Book of American Essays from 1914. Entrepreneurs rarely think about something as vague as legacy as they start their journey, and there's a good reason. Legacy isn't a section of a business plan. It's what happens when you share your passion, take care of yourself and your family, and remain true to your values. It's what happens because you've spent your time raising others up. It's what happens because you've shown the real you in every circumstance. It's what happens because you've spent your days working for what you believe in. Why think about this now? Because you're writing it every day anyway. Your challenge question? What is the one thing you want to be known for most? Are you living it?
Wow. There you go again, making me think. I hate that. No, that's terrific. So, John, let me ask what's probably the stupidest question you may have gotten in any of the interviews you've done about this book. What exactly is a self-reliant entrepreneur? Aren't they all self-reliant, or are you saying they need to be?
I'm definitely saying they need to be. If you Google, here's part of the challenge. If you Google the term self-reliant, you'll find some websites that teach you how to build your own home and make your own furniture and butcher your hog yourself or go it alone, kind of this thing that you don't need to depend on anyone. And I want to suggest it's actually substantially different, maybe the opposite of that. For me, the idea of self-reliance is that you come to trust yourself so fully that you no longer are controlled or reliant on what other people think or many, many of the other things that you have no control over. When you come to that level of trust, I think you get to focus on the only things that you can control, how you show up, and then, of course, how you respond to everything that happens to you, and all around you throughout the day. So this doesn't mean that you're going to go it alone. And in fact, I use the analogy all the time. It's more like the trees in the forest. Every single one of them is unique. They sway in the wind to protect each other. Their canopies don't get into each other's canopies. But you look at the roots on the ground and they're all interwoven and they are feeding each other and nourishing each other and getting support and help from each other. So our whole job, again, is to go back to this idea of trust, is to trust ourselves enough to realize that our, our job in life is to see our life as a work in progress.
Right. So what would be an example of someone who is, as you mentioned at the very beginning, they're not quite, they're relying on things that they can't control?
Well, I think there's lots of entrepreneurs. There's kind of two ways that shows up. We have a lot of other people have a lot of control over how we think or what we pursue, what opportunities we might go after. I mean, how many entrepreneurs have been told they're crazy, that they shouldn't do that. They should keep their job that they have. I mean, all the things that kind of keep us from maybe following what we eventually hopefully come to realize is following our heart and our true path. Mm-hmm. So that's, that's a lot of what not only holds people back, but makes them kind of doubt themselves, makes them kind of, fear the unknown. So that's probably those elements are probably the greatest cause of stress, I think, that a lot of entrepreneurs feel. But then there's a whole lot of things that we're never going to be able to control. I kind of feel like there's three buckets. We have the other people's stuff, we have our stuff, and then we have kind of the nature or the God stuff. Is it going to rain tomorrow? Am I going to get this sale? I mean, we may be able to try to influence how some of those things come up, but we need to let go of, being dependent on, no, it has to work this way or it has to work that way. Because I think what happens ultimately, and again, this is said through the lens of hindsight, is I think we cut a lot of opportunities off by assuming, no, it has to go this certain way, rather than saying, wow, it didn't work this way. What was that here to teach me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as somebody who has done it wrong consistently over time, I know exactly what you're talking about. So it might even be clearer to me, but it also occurs to me that it's not just entrepreneurs. This could be anybody listening who has a job, maybe as a marketer, as a sales manager, a small business, you know, something else where they're not necessarily the creator, the founder of that company, and they on a daily basis are having to go off and go in certain directions, advocate for certain ideas, decisions that a company needs to make.
I agree completely, and I think in some cases, you know, you read that part of the intro. I mean, I just feel like the idea of an entrepreneur is really more about, you know, your spirit rather than your job title.
Yes. Kind
of, you know, if you aim to make a difference, if you aim to have some, you know, meaning in what you're doing, I consider that to be an entrepreneurial thinking. So, you know, if you are stuck in a job that doesn't feed you, if you are working for a company that you don't believe in what they do, then I think you're probably kind of cutting off your ability to experience joy and happiness to its fullest. And so this book really, I think, encourages that kind of mindset. And does that mean you need to quit your job and go find something else to do? Maybe, but it also may mean that you have to rethink, you know, your relationship with what it is that you're doing for a living.
Right, right. We're going to take a break here so I can tell you more about how Blinkist might be the answer to one of your biggest worries. As I mentioned earlier, the number one worry I hear from listeners is that they feel they aren't reading enough books to keep up and be more successful. But there's only so much time and you need to manage it carefully. And unless you're, say, the host of the Marketing Book Podcast, you may not be set up to read a book every week. That's where Blinkist can really be a time saver and a career booster. Blinkist is a smartphone app that takes the key insights from over 3,000 best-selling nonfiction books and distills them into a format that you can read or listen to in just 15 minutes or less. Instead of having to wade through hundreds of pages of a book, spending hours reading each book like I do every week, you can go through two books in 30 minutes. And the books that are on Blinkist are from top-notch authors, many of whom have been guests on the Marketing Book Podcast, including Seth Godin, Guy Kawasaki, Robert Cialdini, Philip Kotler, David Meerman Scott, Anne Hanley, Bob Berg, John Jantz, Jonah Berger, Jill Conrath, Jeb Blunt, and many, many more. Over 40 authors who have been on the show. Blinkist has been selected as one of the best apps by Forbes, The New York Times, and BuzzFeed, amongst others, and it's used by over 10 million people. Right now, Blinkist has a special offer for Marketing Book Podcast listeners. Go to Blinkist.com/marketingbookpodcast right now, today, to start your free trial or get 20% off your yearly plan when you join. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/marketingbookpodcast to start your free trial or get 20% off your yearly plan. And there's no risk because there's a free 7-day trial. Go to Blinkist.com/marketingbookpodcast. And that means you're going to be letting them know that you support the Marketing Book Podcast and that you want that discount. You'll get the free version or 20% off your annual plan. I also have a link to it at marketingbookpodcast.com. It's a very smart investment in your success. And now, back to the show. So let's go back to talk about this a bit, about American transcendentalism. So you talked that this was a period when America's literary voice finally broke free of the influence of other cultures. What was going on there? What was it about this era that you find so relevant for today's world?
Well, to America had only been a country for about 100 years, not even quite 100 years at this point. And obviously European influence was still, you know, very much felt in many of the arts and certainly in literature. But I think what happened that kind of caused this breakout is you think about 1850, we were on the cusp of the Civil War. Women were marching in the streets for the right to vote. We were trying to abolish slavery. So, I mean, this was a very kind of crazy period in American history. And I call it kind of the first counterculture. This is when all of a sudden a lot of folks said, you know what, how we got out of here is not how we're going to get out of here. You know, we don't have to listen to our preacher or our parents or the politicians. We need to start thinking for ourselves. Some of the literature was overt. Thoreau, you know, Emerson's Self-Reliance, which I, you know, borrow heavily on for the title of this book. Those were people that were preaching and teaching this idea of self-reliance and bringing in, you know, kind of a greater idea of how it is to live and how it is to make your living. But if you look at, and as I started to dig in, even the fiction of that time, Scarlet Letter and Moby Dick and Little Women, the protagonist, it was the first time that the protagonist in American literature was very self-reliant as well. I'm going to do me, you know, I have to do what's true to my heart. So even though they weren't really teaching that necessarily, if you look into kind of the themes that started showing up for the first time, I mean, it just is universal across all of the literature. And I still think today it's some of the best entrepreneurial advice and thinking and characters that really have ever been created.
And yet so many of these things are really not radical now.
Yeah, not at all now. But certainly, can you imagine – you know, Ralph Waldo Emerson standing in the pulpit of an 1840 Calvinist, you know, Puritan church saying, you know, we're all connected by spirit and we're embodied with a soul that allows us to really connect directly to, you know, whatever it is we call God. I mean, these were, as you said, pretty standard, not accepted in every circle, but certainly not. I think a lot of people would agree with many of the elements, but at the time, he was kicked out of the church, actually, for having such heretical ideas.
Yeah, and it also makes me wonder about, you know, I often hear that Americans have such an authority problem. I wonder if that was part of it or if that incited it. But speaking of authority problems, and I'm an entrepreneur, and yes, I do have an authority problem. You talk about there's an undeniable element of a counterculture or even internal disobedience in most entrepreneurs. Talk about that.
Well, you know, again, I was a little nod to Thoreau's civil disobedience, which was one of the probably the out of the era, probably from a political standpoint, one of the most notable documents that came out of that era. But I just think that a lot of entrepreneurs, I mean, we start stuff because stuff's broken. It doesn't work for us.
We're not happy with something. Yeah. Right.
And so, you know, 9 times out of 10, we're creating something out of nothing. You know, it didn't exist before. And so I just think you've got to be, you know, I reference a Letters of the Rue Morgue by Poe in one of the readings, and there is definitely a crazy, you know, to a lot of entrepreneurs that, again, I think is a healthy, is a welcome, is how stuff gets done, but not everybody understands it.
Yeah. So, John, in terms of how you take us through the year, I wonder if you could talk about that. Now, what you say is that regardless of when you get this book, start with that day, and then you'll just pick it up in the following year. But can you talk about what your thinking was in terms of the organization, because you've broken the year down into four parts, and then within each one is the individual month, and each month means it touches on a certain theme.
Yeah, so about 4 years ago, I wrote a blog post, and I maybe didn't realize it at the time, but that was the sort of the seed of this book. And it was really just an observation that I'd had that I, you know, as you noted, I've been doing this for almost 30 years. And I've seen stages that I've gone through. And of course, writing a calendar-based book, I talk about those stages as seasons. It's a metaphor that certainly works. But I think there's also a lot of validity to it. Whenever I've started a new aspect, a new book, you know, a new project, a new offering of some type, I always feel like, you know, not everyone succeeds, but the ones that really do succeed, I always feel like kind of go through these seasons of you know, planning and discovery and evolving and growing. And I think there's actually some traits or characteristics to those. Again, as I said, they're never ending. It's not like it's one big, you know, year that you're experiencing. But I decided to kind of use that framework for the book. And then, as you also said, then give each month, you know, resilience or failure or security or commitment to kind of pack the seasons, you know, with what I think were the things that typically are going on in that kind of stage. Frankly, it also gave me an organizational structure for the book. It gave an overall kind of narrative arc. Mm-hmm. But it also allowed me to organize all of my research. I started literally by just reading everything I could on the era, on the, you know, the writings, who were the important players. I mean, I knew Emerson and Thoreau, and there are works of fiction that we were all asked to read. But I dug into their letters and their journals and you know, really obscure folks. It was very important for me to find and bring forward some of the female voices from that era that, as you might suspect, didn't really get a lot of pub or exposure. And in really doing that, I kind of immediately saw the sort of the immensity of the job was like, how am I going to organize all this?
You know, it also seemed to me that this book might have actually taken you longer than any other book you've written. Was that true by any chance?
You know, it did not.
Because I was just thinking about all the source material you had to go through, and then you had to organize it and get it out into 366 different ideas.
Yeah, I guess in hindsight, you know, I kind of jokingly tell people I've been working on this book for 30 years.
Okay.
But you know, the actual, once I kind of decided I was going to do this, signed the contract, literally from signing the contract to the book being published was 15 months. And, you know, that's not absurdly long for a traditionally published book these days.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this, I spent more time in that period. You know, in some of my other books, you know, I basically was saying, here's this concept, here's what I do, here's what you might want to do. It worked for me. And I could write 20,000 words, you know, in a weekend maybe doing that. In fact, I wrote Duct Tape Marketing essentially over 4 3-day weekends because I was essentially just talking about here, you know, here's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But this book, I mean, the most I could write in a day, I think my record was 1,000 words. And now, you know, there's about 200 words on a page. So, you know, 5 or 6 pages was all I could do because it turns out that it's actually harder to write short passages than it is to write 2,000 words about whatever.
Yes, I think so. And that's why I sometimes when I get the shorter books, they seem to be even – I have greater admiration just because it's, I can never remember who said it, something about, I would have written you a shorter letter, but I didn't have time. So I wrote you a long one.
Yeah, this is our friend, Mark Twain.
Mark Twain. Okay. I'm sure he said it more artfully. And you do quote him in the book.
I do. He actually falls just a hair out of the true range of this, but there are a couple authors that were very influenced by the Transcendentalists. And Mark Twain was one. Another was a woman named Willa Cather.
Yeah.
I quote quite a bit. I had an editor one time that I always think about this this term that he used. But he when I went on about something or I didn't get to the point, he would always say, "There's a whole lot of throat clearing in your writing today."
Ouch! It's like they say, "Kill your darlings," or is it Stephen King who said that something? So I want to go back to something we started to touch on earlier, but I'd like you to explain. You talk about this idea that runs through all the works that you've curated. That individuals possess self-knowledge that transcends what they might see and hear from others around them. So is that talking about separating the signal from the noise, not being so influenced by what seems to be the norm?
Yeah, I think very much. I mean, and it kind of also dives into this idea that every human being is unique. There are no two human beings that are alike, but there are also no extra pieces in the universe. You know, we're all here really to fulfill some, and it doesn't have to be what others would call grand, but we are here to fill, you know, some mission. And so I think that, you know, you think about all the people that get talked into, oh no, you're meant to be a doctor, you know, or you're, you know, meant to be this. And I think a lot of people, you know, get that kind of shoved into their brain and that's, you know, they just feel like that's the only path. But I think, you know, Emerson particularly was saying is that, you know, our job really is to find why we're supposed to be here, what we are meant to accomplish, and that's a job that, you know, just comes by experiencing things, comes by staying curious, comes by actually looking for, you know, what that purpose is. And it's not, you know, it's not something that you know, you sit in a room and over a weekend, you know, with your team, you know, you come up with, yes, here's the purpose of our business. You know, I think it's much more about something that you experience and you ultimately, you know, come to by kind of staying true to your core values.
Mm-hmm. So related to that, how, or I don't know, maybe it's too early to tell, but how do different age groups respond to some of the ideas that you are talking about in the book?
Yeah. So one of the things that I did, because this book was going to be so different for me, is I actually, as I started to write, I started sending out to people that I wanted their opinions. You know, first I wanted to say, am I crazy? Should I not be writing this? Is this dumb? You know, like a lot of authors go through that phase. And I was really, curious that because I did, you know, I'm a baby boomer. I sent it out to people of my age and then I also sent it out to millennials and people in their 30s, and they both responded very positively, but for different reasons. I found that probably no surprise, older generation was like, yeah, this gets me to think about, you know, what impact I'm having. You know, does what I'm doing mean anything? You know, like, I mean, which is sometimes a common way to think, you know, as you start to get a little older. But I was equally encouraged by folks in their 30s who said, you know what, this is what I need, because, you know, I need somebody to tell me I got it. You know, that this is almost like, you know, this book is almost like mentoring me in a way to help me kind of think through some stuff that I've not experienced yet in my life.
Mm-hmm. So when I read a book, I learn so much. It's like spending a real intense period of time with the author. But I can only imagine what it's like writing the darn thing. And I'm wondering what... Are there any things that surprised you or that you learned while writing this, or the things that revealed themselves to you?
Yeah, it was like first it started as kind of a master's in mid-19th century transcendental literature. You know?
Right.
So that was the intense part. But then, you know, you think about it, how much time I talked about spending and the sort of intense and sometimes personal nature of what I wrote. You know, I really did feel like, and I remember commenting numerous times to my wife that I just felt like this book was changing me in some ways. And, you know, this is the reason I wrote this book is because, you know, about the time I turned 35, you know, I feel like I went on this journey of self-discovery, and that this has been a important topic to me to constantly be working on myself. And so to kind of compile, you know, that sort of journey into, you know, 6 months of writing, it was pretty intense. And it's sometimes exhausting, quite frankly. But I think the ultimate impact that I'm feeling, you know, from, you know, spending the time with that is I feel like it kind of helped reignite my relationship with my business, with what I'm doing, you know, that, you know, I've been doing for a long time, but I'm still excited about it. It still brings me joy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it also, I won't say redefined my definition of success, but really locked in my definition of success. And, you know, I care less today about, you know, do I have followers here? Did, you know, I get noticed on that? You know, mm-hmm. am I getting credit for, you know, what I did? And more just about how each day feels.
Yeah, well, and it also brought to mind something for me. And I'm not a member of your Duct Tape Consultants Network, but it made me think that it might even give you a perspective into their lives and how they're, it's helping them, but it's also helping their customers and it's helping their lives and all that type of thing.
Yeah, and at the risk of sounding terribly self-serving as the author, I have had numerous people tell me, yeah, you know, I'm going to use this as a workbook with my clients, because all we ever talk about is, you know, the stuff. And what if I actually use this as a way to not only suggest, hey, this, you know, make a better you, you know, we'll make a better business, but as a way to kind of facilitate discussions. My wife and I read this in the morning now, and between you and me, Doug's, she has not been interested in my other books.
Yeah. So, it's only recently you told her what line of work you're in, right?
Exactly. But this we've actually enjoyed. And not, you know, sometimes she's like, oh, you're full of it, you know, I mean, when we read a passage. But, you know, there are a lot of times where it's, you know, it's just given us something to kind of mutually talk about how we think about or feel about a certain aspect. And, you know, when you've been doing something for a while, sometimes you forget that's the real important stuff to talk about.
Mm-hmm. So your wife tells you you're full of it. I'm wondering, are we married to the same woman? So the thing that occurred to me is that you kind of had to pour your heart and soul out onto each one of these pages, because it was based on a lot of your own life's experience and work, and it brought to mind that Ernest Hemingway quote about writing, where he said, "There is nothing to writing. All you do is sit down at a typewriter and bleed."
He also said, write drunk, edit sober, which is probably my favorite.
Oh, man, I've been doing that wrong.
Yeah, this book definitely, like it or not, and I don't know if I could have written this book 10, 15 years ago.
No, I don't think so.
Because, yeah, I really don't. It definitely has, you will know a lot about John Jantz if you read this book. Like it, but I will say this. Here's the interesting thing that I've really enjoyed is that every single person will read this page and get something different. Every page. It won't mean the same thing to two people because, I talk about this. It's sort of ironic writing a book to tell you how to be self-reliant because, the self part is totally on you. And that's the thing. I mean, yes, if I read this, there are some things that I feel are highly personal. Somebody else might read that and not get that feeling at all because it really is one of the things that I did from a style decision very early on is it is all first person plural. I don't say I think you should do this anywhere in the book, or at least if my editor didn't catch it, you might find one. But my intent was that I am a member of the audience. I wrote this book to me as much as I did to every other entrepreneur out there in the world or every person in the world. And so the voice of the book is I walk along the reader as a member of the audience.
Yes, there's a certain vulnerability and honesty to all of it, and you manage the expectations right up front. For me, the book is, and this is a metaphor you may not have heard, and maybe you'll never hear it again, but it's like a marinade. So you just don't read the whole thing, but read it every day or as often as you're so inspired, because and then you can keep reading it over and over and over again. And that's why it's got a place next to the Ryan Holiday's Daily Stoic, which greets me every day. The other thing, though, years ago when I was younger and all my friends were, they're having their first kids or they're having children, I would give them a book. And the book, for the longest time, I would give them was The Book of Virtues, which is a stories. Yeah. So it might have been 20, 30 years ago. And it was very popular. And they would read it to their kids, and it was great. And we got it when our kids were born. And so when I have a friend who's going off to start their business, to start their own business, and it's really kind of a, looking back, it's what a milestone in somebody's in work life. This is the gift they're going to get from me. And if more than one person gives it to them, they're going to know, they're going to meet other entrepreneurs they can give it to. So
I think that's beautiful, Doug. I'm still having trouble getting past the visual of the book sitting in some soy sauce.
Yeah. Well, no, it's Italian dressing, but but I had the whole thing laminated. Yeah. Yeah. Peter Knox at Wiley, he sent me a special edition. No, I'm kidding. So let's read one more, but not just any old day. Let's read April 2nd, which is John Jantz's birthday. And a reason I want to do April 2nd is because it's John Jantz's birthday. But also, if anyone listening to this remembers and it happens to be April 2nd, I hope you'll reach out on social media and wish John Jantz a happy birthday.
I think that's brilliant. That's why I also put in there, author's note, today is my birthday. So, well, happy birthday to me. So anybody who's got the book will be able to find that on April 2nd. I actually did a little other Easter egg thing in this book. I have four daughters. They have obviously been a big part not only of my life but of the words in this book. And so on their respective birthdays, they actually did the reflection that day.
Wow.
Yeah.
So nice work putting the kids to work.
That's right. Exactly. It only means I was like – yes, 362 to go.
So go ahead, April 2nd.
The light of love. It is to the credit of human nature that except where it is selfishness is brought into play, it loves more readily than it hates. Hatred by a gradual and quiet process will even be transformed to love unless the change be impeded by a continually new irritation of the original feeling of hostility. And that's from Nathaniel Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter, 1850. In your entrepreneurial journey, there will always be a tremendous, raging conflict between your head and your heart. Your head will ask, why is this so hard? Why don't people understand? Why must I go back and do this all over again today? But your heart, when given the proper space, will readily answer what I must learn today to move forward, who I must meet today in support of the cause, and how I can greet each day with a fresh point of view. This conflict will carry on until you decide which one to listen, obey. The heart is seen romantically, philosophically, and metaphysically as the place where the flame of love is sparked and kept burning. Sure, love is often portrayed in the metaphorical sense or the greeting card sense, but like love, the entrepreneurial flame is kept alive in our heartfelt passions, particularly in the times it seemed darkest. Your heart is your compass. Passion, love for the day-to-day needs of your dream requires incredible strength to hold and shape. Keeping the flame of love for your business alive will require you to step back and, by a gradual and quiet process, imprint what you love about your business firmly in your heart. Then, and only then, can you go about steadily getting very, very good at doing what you love. Your challenge question: what do you love most about your entrepreneurial journey?
And that one got me thinking too. Jance. So if readers took only one thing away from the book after they've spent a year with it, what would you hope it would be?
My real hope is that they would find themselves being far more mindful of the present moment. And I know that's a really popular thing to say, but we spend a lot of time creating our future, you know, by bringing the past into our present. What I mean by that is that, you know, we're constantly thinking, oh, I know how this picture is going to play out. You know, I never get this job. I never get this, you know, kind of thing. And so we actually are creating our future. And I think if we were able to stay as focused on the present moment as possible, we'd start saying, okay, this thing happened for a reason. You know, what was that reason? How can I see that as an opportunity? So that's the one thing that I hope people get the most. And I, you know, that's not new. Most listeners will say, yeah, I've heard that before. But that's why I think this format is so important, is because that's not something that you just decide to do. That's something that you start to witness how it's showing up in your life. You stick with a book like this or some practice or habit like this, and you start gradually chipping away at the things that are not serving. So that, you know, that to me is what I hope after a year. But I also think that experience tells me that if you read this for a year and you come back to November 15th, I think it is, you know, a year from now, you're going to be a different person. And that reading is going to mean something entirely different to you.
Yes. And you know, that challenge question that you just read, days, weeks could go by before I would ever think about what do you love most about your entrepreneurial journey. And just knowing that is, yep, it's so loaded with benefits as well as adjustments that you could be making. Yep. So are there any recent or upcoming books that you recommend or looking forward to reading?
Well, you bet. So, a friend of mine, Chase Jarvis, who I met as he was getting started with Creative Live, has a book called Creative Calling: Establish a Daily Practice, Infuse Your World with Meaning, and Succeed in Work and Life. Number one. Number two, our mutual friend David Meerman Scott, who really kind of wrote his first book probably about almost the exact same time Duct Tape Marketing came out, has another book that really infuses some of his previous work with kind of his lifelong personal passion as a fan of a couple of musical bands called Fanocracy. So those are two that I would share with your listeners. Mm.
And Chase Jarvis, is his a daily book as well?
No, it's not. He talks about the routines to establishing a daily practice, but it is more a typical kind of chapter by chapter book.
Oh, okay. Super. Well, and I'll add to that about David Meerman Scott. I've read his book and I've already interviewed him, and we're holding that interview until January when the book comes out, and it's absolutely fantastic. So I'm glad you mentioned that. So at marketingbookpodcast.com, we're going to include links to your site and your social media, as well as the page on your site that's all about this book, where you can get some free samples and so forth. You can click through there and buy it. I do hope that listeners will reach out to you on LinkedIn, because we're going to have that link there. And thank you for coming back on the show for the fourth time, because you would think that John Jantz would know after three interviews that, you know, this is kind of tiresome. His jokes aren't that funny, but yet he still comes back. So I appreciate that. And I mean, just think about the listeners, John. Think about what they have to listen to every
fact that you've built, you know, the listenership that you have now is testament to what a service and value you provide for both authors and folks that are trying to figure out what to read.
Well, it's my pleasure. And I think I'm getting more out of it than anyone else, because I just enjoy doing it so much. And for you, dear listener, if you're listening on your smartphone and you subscribe to the Marketing Book Podcast on your favorite podcast app, all of these links can be found right now by going to this episode and clicking on the show notes link. The name of the book is The Self-Reliant Entrepreneur, 366 Daily Meditations to Feed Your Soul and Grow Your Business. The author is John Jantz. John, thank you very much for returning to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Always fun, Douglas.
And that closes the book on episode 253 of the Marketing Book Podcast. For more, check out this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or other helpful resource for whatever situation you find yourself in, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn, where we can chat and I'll try to point you in the right direction. My name again is Douglas Burdett. Special thanks to our sponsor, Blinkist. To support the Marketing Book Podcast and start your free Blinkist trial or get 20% off your yearly plan, visit Blinkist.com/marketingbookpodcast. I also have a link to the special offer at marketingbookpodcast.com. And please join us next time as we welcome Jill Soley to the Marketing Book Podcast to talk about the new book she has co-authored with Todd Wilms, Beyond Product: How Exceptional Founders Embrace Marketing to Create and Capture Value for Their Business. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast. This episode was produced by Amanda Harrison.
I didn't say this on the show. I have said this on some shows. I think we're at a similar time culturally and politically, quite frankly, as we were in 1850 on the cusp of the Civil War.
Of major, major change.
Yeah, and just the divide, you know, that exists in this country. I mean, I you know, there are historians and researchers that write about this, like every fourth generation, you know, you kind of have this like upheaval, you know, period. And I think Gen Z is going to be, you know, the next sort of like 60s, you know, kids saying, you know what, enough, you know, coming. So that's just my take. So I feel like there's an openness to kind of this literature or this writing that I've done in this book, frankly, or at least I'm hearing that from some folks.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.